bear with me. Okay. When I was at school, which wasn't yesterday, one of my least favourite subjects was English language. English grammar. I really struggled with it. I sort of knew what a noun was and a verb, but after that it started getting a bit beyond me. Things like definite articles, indefinite articles, pronouns, but then there were possessive pronouns, intensive pronouns. I really didn't know what most of these things were. And it wasn't until much later, after I'd left school, I think I was probably even in my 40s, when I came across another grammatical term that finally caught my imagination and I understood. I really don't know why nobody at school had taught me that. If they had, it might have made a difference. But anyway, the grammatical term that got my attention was oxymoron, if that'll come up, yes. Now, you're probably going to tell me you all know what an oxymoron is, do you? No? Good, that's what I was hoping. If you said yes, I would have to stop now. An oxymoron. Well, an oxymoron is it's a phrase or a sentence that has two different things in it, two different truths, if you like, that are poles apart. They're completely different. I'll give you some examples, but first of all, in this church, we enjoy learning about Greek. You know, the New Testament that we read a lot is written in Greek. And believe it or not, oxymoron is actually a Greek word. And so I thought you should really know where its derivation comes from. So oxy means sharp. Moron means dull. So you get sharp and dull. They're opposites. You don't normally put them together. Now, I can't believe that any of you here have ever called anybody a moron. At least, if you do in the future, you'll know what it means. And you'll be proud that you're speaking in Greek. But let me just give you some examples of an oxymoron. Deafening silence. You know, I mean, it's daft, isn't it? Deafening silence. And yet you all know what it means. Yeah? That's an oxymoron. Awfully good. Is it awful? Is it good? An oxymoron. It's awfully good. Open secret. Is it open? Does everybody know about it? Or is it secret? Clearly misunderstood. Yeah. But an oxymoron doesn't just have to be two words. It can be a sentence. And quite a lot of people, famous people, if you like, have made it into quotes. Is it MGM Films? I think the guy Samuel Goldwyn. Anyway, this is what Samuel Goldwyn, whoever he is, this is what he said. A verbal contract isn't worth the paper it's written on. Yeah. If you've been spending too much money buying Christmas presents and things, maybe the next one is for you. Live within your income, even if you have to borrow to do so. And when it comes to Christmas, if you're tempted to eat too much, maybe I can resist everything but temptation. Yeah. And I had to put one in tonight about Donald Trump. The budget was unlimited, but I exceeded it. So that's what an oxymoron is. And tonight, I actually want to talk about what I believe is probably the greatest oxymoron there's ever been. And before I do, by way of introduction, really, I just want to tell you a bit of a story about me and my garden. What it's got to do with Christmas? Me and my garden. And when Chrisanna, my wife, and I, when we moved to Worksop about 8 years ago, we began to take an interest in gardening. And The previous owners of the house, they'd got two young boys, so the back garden really looked like a football pitch, not like a garden at all. So we had a challenge on, and we spent quite a lot of time pottering about in the garden, trying to get it looking good, especially, you know, of course, in the summer months. We enjoy the garden. We have wildlife in the garden. We put up, we have a tree just look across from our lounge window. So we put up bird feeders, and so we get the birds coming, and that's great as well. You know, I really love all these kind of things, and I'm pretty much like all birds and animals, and I don't like seeing any of them come to harm. Spiders. Now that's a challenge, spiders. I'm not too keen on spiders, but I wouldn't like to see them killed. So whenever Chrisanna screams in the house, "There's a spider!" what I usually do is I try and get the likes of an empty jam jar, and I'll catch it, trap it, put a piece of cardboard underneath, and then I'll take it to the back door, and we throw it out. I would rather do that than kill a spider. There is one insect in our garden that I have a battle with regularly. It's the ant. And, you know, we've got several ants' nests in our garden, in different parts of our garden. And most of them, I'm very happy just to let them flourish and do whatever they do. They're busy lives. But then there are some other ants that insist on building their nests right up against the house, where the wall of the house and the ground, kind of where they meet, just down in there. And it's usually somewhere near one of our doors. And I know that if they're only one step away from coming into our house. And, you know, we've been caught out before. I remember one year we came back from holiday, and the ants had come in, and when we came in and had a look, they were going across the kitchen floor, a line of them, a continuous line of ants, yeah? Up the first cupboard, along, up the wall, into the top cupboard, where they'd found, you know, sugar and whatever else, and then they go back the other way. So there's all these ants going backwards and forwards, gorging themselves on our food in our kitchen. So I am not too keen on ants that are too near our house. And that's really, you know, when it comes to not killing creatures, that's where I draw a line. When I see the ants are building their nests right outside our house, war is declared. I get the dreaded white powder, and I sprinkle it all the way along the front of our house. And, of course, usually it works, and there's no more ants. But, you know, these ants are really stubborn. And only a few days later, the ants are back again. And I don't know how they do it. They just seem to keep thriving, and I have to keep getting the white powder out again. And this goes on all through the summer. Yeah. But there was a day this last summer, I was sat outside, warm summer evening, daydreaming, just relaxing, letting the world go by, and watching these ants on the ground. And, you know, in my dream, I was kind of thinking, how can I stop them from building their nests beside the house? How can I get them to build their nests in other places where it's safe and they can flourish and be very happy? And, of course, I can't talk to the ants. They just don't listen to me. I can try shouting at the ants, but it really doesn't do any good either. They're ants, and I'm humans, and I just cannot communicate with these ants. It's a real dilemma. But there I was in my daydream, thinking away, and I thought, well, what if I became an ant myself? And what if I kind of parachuted myself into their world? Do you think I could communicate with them then? Well, I'm not sure. I'm not sure that they would listen to me. Because, you see, I would be a stranger. Even though I'm an ant, I would be a strange ant. And we we don't respond to strangers too quickly. We need to warm up and get friendly with people before we really respond to them. So for me to parachute myself into to be an ant like that, it wouldn't work. And then in my daydreaming, as impossible as it may sound, the best way I decided for me to get into this colony of ants was to actually be born as an ant, to grow up in that ant community, to earn their respect. And in so doing, I should be able to speak to them and tell them, don't build your nest here. Build it over there, you know. And if this worked, would they respond positively? I think they might. I think they might move to another part of the garden. Although I guess there would still be some ants who would stubbornly continue in the same old way of life, hoping that the dreaded white powder never came their way. Sadly, they would miss out forever on this new and better life that was being offered them in my message of hope. Well, I continued letting my mind wander, getting more and more excited about the plans for this ant mission that I was going to go on. And then I had another thought. Was I actually prepared to pay the price of doing this? Was I willing to give up everything that I have here, the people that I know, my life as it is, to become an ant? And the more I thought about it, I thought, no, I just could not do that. I do not love and care for ants in my garden enough to give up everything that I have myself. I would rather stay where I am. Well, I tell you, that that actually was a true story. I did have that sort of daydream. That's the crazy way my mind maybe works. But it did get me thinking. It did make me think about Jesus and what he's done for us. And Jesus is the Son of God, and along with the Father and the Holy Spirit, together they are God. And Jesus lives in heaven. And, you know, heaven is a wonderful place, far better than anything that we can ever imagine here. It's a fantastic place, and he's there, you know. He's also the creator of our world. He made the world that we're in. He made the universe that we're part of. And all the beautiful things. You know, when we go on holiday, don't we go to see beautiful mountains and lakes and things like this if we can? You know, we enjoy the beauty that God has made for us. And there's a line in a song that we used to sing many years ago, really. But I kind of like it when thinking about Jesus as being the creator God. And it's talking about his hands. And it says, hands that flung stars into space. And I was just thinking about it. When Jesus was building the universe, he said, I'm going to throw a star there. And I'll put another one up there. And we'll have one over here. I mean, a star is as big or bigger than our own sun. Our sun is a star, isn't it? And the other stars out there in the universe are as big or bigger than our own sun. I'll fling it out there. I'll fling it there. How big is God? You know, it's just amazing. And there's a verse in the Bible that says, God inhabits eternity. And we're kind of stuck in time. And we're kind of closed in our thinking. God inhabits eternity. What a big, fantastic God we have, who lives in a fantastic place called heaven. And just to try to help us understand that, I just want to share a couple of verses with you. The first one is from the book of Isaiah. And actually, tonight we've read from Isaiah. This is a different chapter. Who has scooped up the ocean in his two hands, or measured the sky between his thumb and little finger? Who has put all the earth's soil in one of his baskets, weighed each mountain and hill? Think about what that verse is saying. Yeah. Who has scooped up the oceans in his hands? Who has measured the sky between his thumb and his little finger? How big is our God? Who has put all the earth's soil into a basket and weighed the mountains and the hills? Does it begin to give you the impression of just how big our God is? And I want to show you one more verse from Isaiah. It's in the same chapter, just a little bit further on. Don't you understand the foundation of all things? God sits high above the round ball of earth. The people look like mere ants. You'll understand now why I chose that verse. Yeah. Yeah. To God, we're like mere ants. We're so small. God is so big. So phenomenal. And I just think, you know, the guys in the International Space Station, those people that go around the world once or twice a day, every day, the view they have of the world, probably something like, you know, God sits high above the round ball of earth. It's interesting that I wish that the people in Christopher Columbus's day had read their Bible. The Bible says the earth is a round ball of earth. It's not flat. Anyway, those two passages were from the book of Isaiah, which is in the Old Testament, before Jesus came. Then there's the New Testament, after the first Christmas Day. And I just want to read a verse from the New Testament as well. In the past, God spoke to our ancestors through the prophets at many times and in various ways. That's through Isaiah and other prophets. But in these last days, he has spoken to us by his Son, whom he appointed heir of all things, and through him also he made the universe. That's Jesus, the Son of God. That's who tonight we've been celebrating and worshipping here. And you know, I didn't consider the ants in my garden. I didn't love them enough that I was willing to become an ant to tell them how they could live a better life on the other side of the garden. And yet, Jesus, who lives in heaven, which is a phenomenal place, he came down to us, even though we're like mere ants, because he loved us enough, and he had a message to tell us that was so, so important. He was willing to leave heaven to come and tell us. I think that's amazing. Amazing love. I started off tonight talking about oxymorons. And I said I was going to tell you what I think is one of the biggest oxymorons ever. And it's in the hymn, Hark the Herald Angels Sing. We're going to sing it in a little while. But I always think that Hark the Herald Angels Sing, I think, is based, was written about, as much as anything, the shepherds, when the angels came and met the shepherds. And we've heard that passage already as well this evening. Those shepherds are out on the hillside, and all of a sudden, an angel came, and then there was a whole throng of angels praising God and worshipping. And that was kind of like, For one rare moment in time, heaven and earth kind of came together. And it was a phenomenal thing. And the angels understood the significance of why Jesus was being born as a baby in Bethlehem. They understood it. And they go, boy, this is fantastic. Because they knew that we were going to at last get that message that we needed to hear. And in Hark the Herald Angels Sing, the words go, Hark the Herald Angels Sing, glory to the newborn King, peace on earth and mercy mild, God and sinners reconciled. You all know it, I'm sure. Joyful, All ye nations rise, join the triumph of the skies. With the angelic hosts proclaim, Christ is born in Bethlehem. Christ is born in Bethlehem, I believe, is one of the greatest oxymorons ever written. Why is that? Because just think about it. Christ, who's so big, who flung the stars into space, came all the way down to be a baby. You know, the contrast between a baby and the Son of God is just so phenomenal, so fantastic. To get those two concepts into one verse, one line of Hark the Herald Angels Sing. You know, it's just amazing. Jesus, the Son of God, came down to be a baby so that he could grow up amongst the community that he was going to be in, earn their respect, until when he was an adult, he could share with them the message that he so dearly wanted to give them. And it seems to me that if he felt it was that important, then we ought to make ourselves aware of what that message is. You know, if that message that he wanted to give was that important, we need to find out what it is for ourselves. And I really hope that tonight, before you leave, you'll take any opportunity, if you don't already know what that message is, to find out more. The message we're going to do, there's a few things we're going to do this evening, but one of the things is when you leave tonight, out under the Christmas tree, out here, there are gifts that have all been wrapped really impressively. I was very impressed when I saw it. And there's a gift for each one here tonight. And please take one of those presents, that wrapped up presents, away with you tonight. In there, there's one or two goodies. There's, in particular though, there's a little booklet. There's several different booklets. Don't know which one you'll get. But in these booklets, it tells more about the message that Jesus felt was so important that he had to come to earth to tell us. And we're going to learn more about it as we finish the service this evening. But I just urge you, if, you know, me and my aunts, I couldn't do it. But Jesus felt it was that important that he came down to tell us that. Please, if I've said anything tonight and you would like to know more and I can help you, just come and see me afterwards if I'm over here, or if you take the book away and you've come with somebody else, please talk to them tonight or later after you've read the book. But don't let this opportunity go by. We're going to sing in a little while, Hark the Herald Angels Sing. And I really hope for those of you here who understand the message of Jesus, what he came to tell us, that as we sing it later on, it'll just heighten your appreciation of what Jesus has done for you individually. And for those of you who don't really know the message, I really pray that it will spark a curiosity amongst you. Well, I'm going to sit down and our choir are going to stand up and sing to us all. And I just want to wish you a very merry Christmas when it comes. Thank you.